Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With me today is Daniel McAdams, our co-host. And Daniel, good to see you this morning.
How are you this morning, Dr. Paul?
I'm doing very well. Hey, and we're going to be talking today about the disarray in foreign policy and who should be surprised. You know, I keep thinking about why is there so much disarray figuring out who's on whose side, you know. So, but that should be expected because when you have intervention as a policy per se that we can intervene for whatever we want, there you're going to have disagreements on when you intervene, to what degrees, and which factions this, and I think that's what we're witnessing now. It's not uniform, you know. Mm-hmm. Obviously, there are times when it's more uniform. I would say when a nation is totally brought together with crises, you know, like 9/11, there's not much up for debate, at least when it's happening, until people look at it. But everybody knows what they're talking about. But now we're talking about a disarray more than average, you know, starting with the Germanys in Frankfurt all the way to Baghdad and the Middle East and what Congress is doing, you know, and the Congress fighting with the president. There's strong feelings and beliefs. But one thing they disregard is, you know, the principles of non-intervention and the Constitution. That they don't seem to worry about that. It's sort of what is what seems to be immediately important. But we know that there's a conference coming up in Warsaw at the end of this week, a two-day conference, and it's going to be with us and the Europeans, and it's to get the Europeans on board because we decided you know, break our promises, the signed treaty with Iran, and back off on this and blame it all on the Iranians and put on terrible sanctions. And that ended up challenging the principle of free markets. When you trade with people, which we like, all of a sudden it challenges that. And there were some people who liked trading with Iran, especially the Europeans. Yeah. There's a benefit to it. And interestingly enough, you know, Iraq, which has been you know, kicked around a bit by outsiders in the United States, you know, that all of a sudden the government we created in Iraq said, well, we want to trade with Iran, yeah. You know, even though we orchestrated an eight-year war. A million people died in this war with Iraq against Iran. But things change, and now they're different. But this conference is coming up, and we're supposed to push everybody and say, you support our sanctions. And, of course, that contradicts everything we believe in, because the trade is a substitute for the fighting, and we should be doing less of that, less sanctions and more trade.
And, you know, Trump is unleashing his two top people, acting Secretary of Defense Patrick Shanahan and Mike Pompeo. He's going to send one to the Middle East and one to Europe to twist arms about the Iran deal. The Trump administration is determined. This is the one consistency in the Trump policy, unfortunately, determined to do away with Iran as we know it. So they have Pompeo was in Europe, and he'll be in Warsaw. It actually starts tomorrow on the 13th and 14th, this conference. The main goal is to twist European arms and basically tell them, hey, you either do business with this little country, Iran, or you do business with the U.S. If they take it to that level, it's going to be very difficult for the Europeans to deal with. And they've, you know, they've created sort of an alternative, sort of a de-dollared way of approaching trade with Iran. But it's, from what I understand, not working extremely well. And there's probably going to be a lot of cold feet in Europe when Pompeo starts throwing his considerable weight around.
Right. You know, the economy in the European Union was doomed to fail. I mean, the basic principles weren't correct, and I think that's what we're seeing. But this also leads to these international problems, too. But it's a mess over there. They're fighting among themselves, and it was not a solution to the differences that naturally existed in Europe. Even though individuals like Soros love the idea, put them together, and all of a sudden we'll have love and joy, and we'll tell them what to do. But interestingly enough, Soros is getting a little antsy as well. He wrote this long editorial just recently and said, you know, he's worried. And I think he's probably telling us the truth. He's worried that there's a populist movement in Europe. And, you know, that term is so loosely used, you know, even a libertarian could say, well, populism where the people are treated well and there's an orientation. But that's not what they're talking about.
Yeah.
They're talking about a populism of protectionism and managed trade and things. And so he's worried about his European Union, and he's afraid that the European Union may break up, which it probably, you know, will, and it will have a lot of effect on the euro. But that is a consequence of a failed economic policy, and now the failure of the foreign policies come about, and they're trying to iron out all these differences. Even this German newspaper came out, was a little bit flamboyant, I hope, saying, well, you know what, this could lead to a Nazi-type European Union. So there's not much stability there, and as I see that evolving, I see a similarity to what's happening in our own country. You know, our economic policies are deeply flawed. You know, the debt is out of total control, and we do not have the credibility with our foreign policy that we've had before, because, you know, especially when you see this conference getting together, how are we going to defy the Americans? Why are they telling us to put on sanctions? Why are they undermining what we want to do? Because they discovered there was a natural benefit to having a decent relationship with the Iranians. And so now they're being further punished by, and on top of their failed economic policies at home. So this is, you know, a worthy argument, a worthy fight. I just hope they iron it out correctly and they don't go in the wrong direction, because radical populism or radical socialism can hardly be the answer to too much government. They have to think more in terms of free trade and sound money.
And when someone like Soros is having a panic attack over populism, what he really means by that is any European country that dares to defy Brussels or Washington. And that's what infuriates him. And we have two good examples of it right now, and that's Italy and Hungary. Italy refused to go along with the European recognition of Juan Guaido, the self-proclaimed president of Venezuela, and they said correctly, we don't believe in interfering in the internal affairs of Venezuela or any other country. That's populism. In Hungary, it's defying Brussels on migrants, on immigration, and that's populism. And in fact, interestingly enough, Pompeo was in Budapest yesterday, and he was doing some arm twisting himself. The whole tour was sold as a kind of a getting along, getting back together. But he used it to get some digs in. And here's actually a quote I wrote down. He had a press conference with the Hungarian foreign minister, Szijjártó, and here's what he said, quote, we must not let Putin drive wedges between friends in NATO. Hungarians know all too well from their history that an authoritarian Russia will never be a friend to freedom and sovereignty of nations, you know, so digging that in.
But, you know, even this disarray is reflected in our own foreign policy when it comes to Congress now standing up against Trump, you know, on Yemen, passing the resolution in the Senate that we need to quit this. But at the same time, they're very defiant. And Trump and the Congress wants to really, really punish the Saudis, you know, for the murder of Khashoggi. But, you know, that of course, is a mixed bag, because Trump's right. Why should we be in the business of punishing him? But he doesn't want to punish him because it's none of our business. He wants to punish him because he wants to defend, you know, the Saudis.
Yeah.
And then this raises the question, why are we really obsessed with the Saudis? And it has to do with the coalition, the coalitions of the U.S. government, the Saudis and Israel, and it's designed to be anti-Iranian, and that is what's going on. But you know, Trump is very, very annoyed by the Congress passing this. In matter of fact, they are passing a rule that Trump says he's not going to listen to on the Magnitsky Act to punish Saudi Arabia. But he says, I'm going to ignore it, and they're going to fight over that. But the trouble is, they're fighting on the fringes of different types of intervention, and that's missing the whole point. What are we doing there?
Yeah.
You know, the answer isn't getting better management and better rapport with the two factions and work things out, you know. It's because we're there, and interventionism invites different opinions and disagreements. And when the policies fail, then they can get pretty aggravated with each other. And I think that's what's happening internationally as well as in our own government.
It's pushback, I think. It has a lot to do with it. Well, you know, a member of Congress yesterday found out what happens when you state the obvious, which is that Israel has a lot of influence over U.S. foreign policy, especially in the Middle East. That it's controversial is surprising. But, you know, we see this with Shanahan, the acting Secretary of Defense's visit to Iraq, surprise visit to Iraq. The problem in Iraq is they're being told, you're going to do what we say. We want to use your territory as a staging ground if we need to go back into Syria, and we want to use it to spy on Iran, to watch Iran. And the Iraqi government said, well, hang on a second, that's not what the deal was. You're here to fight terrorism. So it's they've both been rejected. According to the Iraqi constitution, of course, Iraqi territory can't be used as staging ground to attack neighbors. But it's really providing some problems. And they're also strong-arming Iraq to stop buying, as you pointed out early, don't buy Iranian oil. You know, it's right next door. Don't buy it. Don't you dare buy it. And so basically, they're telling the Iraqis, you have to do something that goes against your national interest to satisfy our foreign policy goals to isolate Iran so many thousand miles away. And it seems like that real message to companies, countries liberated by the U.S., you never get your sovereignty back.
But it's interesting that there's a very strong coalition to be anti-Iranian. Mm-hmm. But right now, it's a little weaker now because there's a disagreement with the Congress dealing with Yemen. And I think back to a time, and I think you may recall either the incident or me talking about it, and that was I was on a program, and it was probably back in the 80s or so, the period of time when the coal came up, and I made a mention that we ought to just stay out of there. What are we doing there? Why are we in Yemen? Why do we have refueling there and all this stuff? And boy, I was viciously attacked because they said that was being anti-Israel and anti-Semitic. So sometimes when people talk about anti-Semitism, they ought to define it because, you know, that just seems... But that shows the difference. Back then, it elicited a strong criticism of me for saying that. At the same time now, you know, even the very, very strong... people anti-Iranian and in the coalition are saying the same thing and even stronger. Quit doing it. Quit sending weapons over there. But it's probably going to be too little too late because I think Trump will probably win that fight. He's not going to walk away from that. I think he has trouble when he really wants to walk away from Syria. And the same group that wants him to do something in Yemen are saying, Dale, you can't leave. Yeah. You can't leave Syria. You must stay there.
Yeah. It's amazing. And talking about Trump and Bolton on Iran, we have some tweets from yesterday that maybe we can put up. But, you know, in the meantime, here's Trump. He's going on about Iran. This is yesterday. 40 years of corruption, 40 years of repression, 40 years of terror. The regime of Iran has produced only 40 years of failure with a hashtag. The long-suffering people deserve better. And here's Bolton, the same thing, basically. After 40 years, Iran has failed to fulfill its promises to its citizens. You know, this is sort of a crocodile tear. Somehow they care about Iran and failed promises. What about our own failed promises?
Well, that's the one point. But the other one, if you read that carefully, never once do they charge them with aggression.
Yeah.
It's always, they don't treat the people right. And you know, we really care about how we treat the people because look at how well we treated the Iraqi people, which was one of the major reasons why we ended up with 9/11, because we were bombing and killing innocent people.
Yeah.
So this whole complaint is that we're complaining, well, they're not civil libertarians. And, you know, some of that might be, you know, correct.
True, yeah.
I don't think I want to move to Iran, but the whole thing is that how are we treating our own people, and are we charging them with invasion of territory, expanding their empire? I don't think they're on the verge of having a Persian empire restored, you know, and yet what's really going on is the American empire, I think, is becoming more threatened than it ever has been. And the alliances that we have are a lot weaker. And that's why these disagreements are going to continue. And there will be more pragmatism. So I think it's good when you see the Europeans speak out and say, you know, it's to our benefit to have trade. See, that's an important message because that is the alternative to war and sanctions. And so I think that is good, but I don't think they deal with that in in the terms that we would deal in, free trade versus war versus sanctions, which lecturing and getting involved in internal affairs of other nations, this sort of thing. They just look at it, how are we going to support those people who support us financially, and who has more control in the Congress? This sort of thing becomes a more important issue.
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, one little didn't get a lot of notice, but when the intelligence committee came before the Senate, I think it was last week, they talked about the strategic challenges to the U.S., et cetera, et cetera. One of the things they did point out, and they did disagree with President Trump, and they essentially said, as we pointed out on the show, that the 2007 NIE, National Intelligence Estimate, on Iran remains in force. They're still not pursuing nuclear weapons. They're still in compliance with this deal, even though we unilaterally pulled out of it. So in this, I guess, hence is the title of our show and the theme of what we said, trying to give the appearance of strength around the world, or actually sort of hiding and masking a real weakness as the empire cracks and there's more resistance to it.
Yeah, and the way I see it, because I always connect it with economic matters, the economy has a role to play in this. And because we may soon end up with a major economic crisis, and then we have these troubles internationally, they're going to come together. But I can't help but think that the stability, if I were the manager of the empire, I would say, hey, we're in trouble. You know, people are telling us what to do, and they don't want to do this. They keep challenging us, and we're running out of money, even though we pretend that $1 trillion a year deficit doesn't really matter. And besides, you know, modern monetary theory says that really it doesn't hurt to print as much money as you need. It seems like the markets are doing quite well with zero interest rates and printing money. So I think they're overconfident internationally, and they're overconfident with the domestic economy as well.
Absolutely. And I would just close up by reminding people, if you like what we do, subscribe to our YouTube channel here at Ron Paul Liberty Report. But also go to ronpaulinstitute.org and subscribe to free updates there. I do a kind of a weekly update column that's exclusive for our subscribers. Get it out to you right away. So if you do that, you can follow what we're doing and try to follow some of the late breaking things. Dr. Paul?
Very well, and I think that what we're going to see is this fighting going on continuously. It is important about the policy, whether it's interventionism versus non-interventionism. But then we also have a situation in Washington that a lot of people don't understand, and that is that the partisan fighting is very, very real, and they use it for party advantages and political advantages. But at the same time, the big issues will still be pro-war, because the resolution we even talked about a little while ago strongly supported about telling Trump, you can't come home, you have to fight this war, this sort of thing. So we have the big side where the large effort is to keep things going and obeying and working with the deep state. At the same time, believe me, the bitterness between those who get to rule and satisfy their special interests, very, very real. But I think it's going to get a lot worse, because the more bankrupt we become, the more difficult it is for us to finance these events, the worse it's going to be. So we should be prepared for that. But the best part is it's not that difficult to figure out. I mean, common sense should tell us that you just can't have zero interest rates and spend trillions and trillions of dollars and everything is going to be okay. And the answer certainly is, like an old-fashioned answer, live within our means and get along with people and trade with people, and don't initiate violence against somebody else. Don't initiate aggression, and try to be more honest with ourselves in saying that, oh, the Iranians are the ones who are committing all the crimes. They're the aggressors, and we have to stop them. And if you don't do it, you're un-American, and you don't believe in our Constitution. You don't believe in our liberties. Well, we need to be more honest with the people. Our government needs to be more honest with us, so that there's a better understanding about exactly what's going on. And I like to divide the issue up to between liberty and authoritarianism, and sound money versus fiat money. And it doesn't become that difficult. And people say, well, it's still overwhelming. How do we get it started? Well, I would suggest send only people to Washington that actually read the Constitution and say that, you know, this is a pretty good idea. I wonder where these ideas came from. Then we would be a lot better off. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today to the Liberty Report. Please come back soon.